It is 25 minutes after the hour on a Tuesday morning, and on Tuesdays, we typically, this hour, talk to Dr. Don Clark, and we're going to do exactly that. Now, Don is a biochemist and has years of experience in pharmaceuticals. He's with the Creation Moments Ministry. He's the vice chair of their board. We're speaking electricity today, and Don, you know, we had this, I think they called it a G4 geomagnetic storm this last weekend. NOAA, that's the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Agency, I think I got that right, has nothing to do with the Ark and the Great Flood. But NOAA warned us, and they said, this is such a powerful geomagnetic storm, and I forgot the term they used. It was colossal waves of energy hitting the Earth. It said it could disrupt communications. It could interfere with FM radio. It could kill the Internet for a while. It could interfere with satellite communications, and it might even knock out the electric grid. And that sent chills down my spine. I'm thinking, what would this country look like if the electric grid all of a sudden went down? And it was pretty unnerving when I really considered it. Is our electric grid like a house of cards? Is it weak? Is it aged? Is it not ready for the onslaught of new technology?
Oh, my goodness. Not ready at all. I mean, if you remember back in Snowmageddon here in Texas, They estimated that we were 10 to 15 minutes away from complete blackout across the state.
He referred to Snowmageddon. That was 2 years ago in February when it got down to zero and wind chills below that. Texas had been given money by the federal government to winterize all the coal-powered power plants and other like natural gas so that it could withstand cold weather. Instead, some commission decided, hey, let's go green, and they built wind turbines instead. Tell us what happened to those wind turbines, Don.
Yes, they built wind turbines, and you do have the option of putting heaters on wind turbines so that they will run if you get a deep freeze like we had. However, they chose not to do that, and so the wind turbines actually froze and did not perform like they were hoping to perform. In the meanwhile, the power plants were ignored. The standard power plants were ignored, and many of those wound up freezing as well. And so they weren't winterized like the money should have been used for. And so, the Energy Commission, which is actually the Railroad Commission here in Texas, controls the energy and energy production in Texas, or regulates, I should say. They really had a snafu there, but this is happening in multiple states. If you recall, in California, they had some brownouts because, again, they were going green and ignored their existing power grid. And they had problems with their power grid, and because it was getting old and it was aging, and it was causing forest fires and all kinds of other havoc in the state. So this is a big problem, and won't be solved by thinking green. Really,
the Cornwall Alliance is predicting a looming. It says there is a looming. That's not a prediction. It says there is a looming electricity shortage in this country. There's no such thing as a non-critical time if you're going to lose electricity, but some of the threats on the horizon don't stem from sunspots. They stem from, shall we say, ineptitude.
Well, and just wrong thinking. I mean, for 20 years, the U.S. electric power policy has been dominated by this by trying to mitigate global warming, by reducing the carbon dioxide emissions in particular. And so we have cut back on our coal-fired electric plants to the tune of cutting our electric production by 60%. Now, from 2007, for example, to today of 2020, of last year, last statistics that we have, we've replaced that with solar power, which gave us an extra 14%, and natural gas power plants, which gave us an extra, 30% or so. or less.
But Don, you can't say this is extra because the old standbys, like coal-powered plants, are being shut down.
They're being shut down. And so we lost 60% of the energy production due to the coal-fired plants being shut down. So we are now at something like 15 to 20% deficit in our electric power generation capability. And there's many folks that say your energy production makes a wealthy nation. And so if you want to bring down a nation, the best way to do it is to reduce your power producing capability. And of course, we've done that by saying, oh, we are gasoline and fuel independent before Biden came into office. And when he came into office, he said, oh, we're just shutting down all the production of new oil fields. And so we can't drill anymore for new oil production. And it made us energy dependent in that sector. And now with the reduction, I mean, we have literally tons and tons of coal in this country. And the oil that we have in this country, just the ones that we know about, would last us over 200 years in the oil producing capacity at the rate we were using it. Well, we're not using it, we're not drilling and sucking it out of the ground as much as we were. So now it's probably up to 250 years of those fields that we know about. And of course, there's many more oil that we don't know about. And so there is no problem with the source of oil. The problem is the mentality of these folks that regulate the industry and of course, in Washington, D.C., in trying to produce a net zero type of CO2 type of emissions. I mean, even here in the state of Texas, for example, our governor decided, well, we're going to spend billions of dollars and we are going to build a net zero natural gas power plant. And what that means is we suck CO2 out of the atmosphere, we reduce the CO2 to methane, and then we burn the methane, the natural gas that we produce. Well, there is a cost to doing that.
Well, I'm wondering if it costs as much to draw CO2 out of the atmosphere and convert it as you produce with the method. It seems like there should be a power loss in that, something in the physics
one
of
One would
it,
yeah. think. I mean, if you look at the energy balance, one would think basically taking off two oxygen atoms and putting four hydrogen atoms on a carbon would cost you some energy. And indeed it does. And I haven't studied and to see how you get net positive energy out of that, but that is the type of things that these crazy people are doing.
There's an interesting factoid in this article from the Cornwall Alliance, and that's what spawned our conversation this morning. It said the transition to green energy drives three new sources of power demand. First, 22 states have zero emissions vehicle mandates, which intend to ban the sale of gasoline cars by 2035. Now, but this March, the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, finalized regulations to force about 40% of new light vehicles, that's lightweight vehicles, by 2030 to be electric, to the extent that electric vehicles are adopted. Well, in New England, they've banned gas appliances. There's another government effort there. In new housing, and they have concluded that a shift from gas appliances to electrical appliances in New England would require more new electricity than that shift to EVs. So there's more than just the EV factor here. There are other government programs incentivized somehow that are costing us energy and threatening the system.
Well, and costing us a tremendous increase in our energy cost overall, too. Because when you shift, let's take Europe, for example, or just Germany. When they shifted to solar and wind, they didn't convert 100% over from natural gas or from other types of energy sources. Their energy costs to the consumer doubled when they did that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing across the country, that the cost per kilowatt hour of electricity is increasing as we convert over to these alternative forms of energy production. Now, we know that solar here in Texas, for example, and the wind power doesn't work in the winter, and certainly the solar doesn't work at night. And if the wind stops blowing, of course, you're not generating any electricity there either. But let's just consider the electric vehicles, for example, EV, and how much energy the EV would suck out of our electric power grid if everybody went to electric vehicles. And it turns out, and I just did a little search at Edmunds to see how much how much electricity does an electric vehicle actually use. And it turns out to be anywhere between 300 to 400 kilowatt hours per month. So if you extrapolate that out to a year, now this is per vehicle. If you extrapolate that out per year, you're looking at 3,600 to 4,800 kilowatt hours per year, which if electricity costs 20 cents per kilowatt hour, and it's a little less here, at least for us in Texas, but let's say it costs that much, then you're looking at a cost to the consumer to charge his car of about $720 to $960 per year, compared to about, if you look at the fuel used for the same number of miles driven, about $1,600. So the consumer gains a little bit right now. But as I said, that fuel cost can be expected, the electricity cost can be expected to double. And now it's costing you more for your electric vehicle, to power your electric vehicle, than it did before. But if you look at how much electricity is going to be used in that 1 year period, you're looking at pretty much 300 million cars that are on the road today. You're looking, if each one of those were replaced by an electric vehicle, you're looking at over 100 gigawatt hours of power needed to just charge those batteries, 100 gigawatts of power. Now, that sounds like a lot of power, and it is. And where is that going to come from? Well, it's not going to come from wind power. It's not going to come from solar power. So what are you going to use in order to generate that extra power? And as you've already mentioned, if you stop using gas appliances and turn those into electric, the least efficient form of heating is electric. The most efficient that you can have is the gas, is the natural gas, which we have plenty of. So we're going from a very efficient appliance now to electric appliances, and trying to replace all of the gas appliances with electric appliances, that you're sucking up even more electricity. And then finally, this other area, which I don't think you mentioned yet, is the artificial intelligence.
No, that's a brand new factor to me. I didn't know about that. This is intriguing.
Well, artificial intelligence, everybody's touting, artificial intelligence is coming, and Apple is working on it, Microsoft is working on it, and all these computer companies and new companies, ChatGPT and all of these things that we're hearing about, they're going to be tremendous tools.
Amazon is big into that, too. So there's another major corporate entity.
These big companies, for them to survive in the next generation, they've got to go to generative AI, which is a tremendous leap in artificial intelligence. We have been using artificial intelligence for at least 40 years in such things as Cirrus, for example, on the Apple iPhone, or Alexis on the Google phones. That is a form of artificial intelligence. Apple has announced that coming this year in the newer models, they're going to soup up Cirrus so much that we're going to be astonished by what Cirrus, what's her name? Is that, that's not Cirrus.
Siri.
Alexa.
Siri. Yeah. Siri will be able, and my phone just woke up because I said Siri. it's going to be able to do things that we haven't even imagined yet.
Well, the backside of this is all this use of artificial intelligence requires massive server capacity,
which doesn't exist now. Tying it back to our discussion of using even more electricity. Why are servers so power intensive? Well, it turns out that you need a tremendous amount of computing power in order to be able to respond in real time. Question about, you know, hey Siri, what's the weather like today? And it'll probably tell me. But in order to respond live, you have to have tremendous computing power. And if many, many people are using the servers, you, not only do you have to build larger servers with larger storage capacity.
They're talking multi-acre data centers from the companies like Amazon, Alphabet, Meta, Microsoft, dozens of other firms building massive new multi-acre data centers. There are already 2,700 data centers around the country. They'll be upgraded as well. And they're talking about, I might be stealing your line here, Don, but power consumption boosts 6 to 10 times. To run these places.
Right. And so not only do you have to have bigger facilities, it takes much more cooling capacity because as you increase the processor speeds, it generates more heat. So you need bigger air conditioning systems, HVAC systems, in order to cool them down. And so we're going from, let's say, the servers today use about 4%. Of U.S. electricity. We're looking in the future going up to 20% of the electric consumption of the whole country.
My goodness. 20%.
So we've lost 20% because we've taken the coal away. We're gaining an extra 14% usage just from artificial intelligence alone. And then you also add to that the EVs and the loss of being able to use natural gas for your appliances. This is insanity. We are destined for blackouts.
Now, there is no mention in this article of nuclear power, however. We've talked about this a number of times in the past. Nuclear should be an option, should it not?
It should be an option, and we should be. We've talked about these little modular nuclear power plants. They generate, if my memory serves me right, about 50 gigawatts worth of power in a little mini.
They're still big enough. They take a tractor trailer to haul them. But the point is, they can go into rural areas or unpopulated areas and run businesses there. Generate power in diverse locations where there aren't cities. So
right. Well, and you don't have to transmit the power over long distances. It can be delivered, as you said, right next to where it's needed. And these servers will probably need them. But the bad rap that nuclear power got, especially after Chernobyl accident in Russia, we've shut down our nuclear power plants. It's like, oh, we've got three nuclear power plants, four in California. So let's shut them down because we're afraid that they're going to explode or implode or something like that. And the technology has increased. Oh, yeah, you get some nuclear waste from these power plants, and we need to deal with that. But the waste that you get from a windmill, these wind generators, these plastics that do not degrade, you have to cut them up and bury them. So we're going to have tremendous landfills. And these, the generators, they need servicing every year. And the generator themselves only last about 5 years. And so you got to bring your cranes out and put new generators in. So all of that extra cost just is going to add to the cost of electric power generation, which will be passed on to the consumer. Thank you very much. Now, isn't it interesting that we have a agency, and this is the problem, one of the problems here in the United States, and it's probably around the world, these regulatory agencies that have no ability to make new laws are making new laws. Right? You just you read earlier
the word, the key word regulatory there. They have that power, and it may be that the American public has to rise up and say no, make them agencies that recommend, study, solve problems, but are not regulatory in nature.
Yes. So they generate these regulations, which we all must live under, with no legal authority to do that. So Congress didn't pass a law that says, you know, by 2030, which, by the way, is the date for the Great Reset. So I don't know if there's any coincidence there, but the EPA says, oh, they finalized this in March. They finalized regulations to force about 40% of the new light vehicles, which is your car, by the way, and mine, to go to electric by 2030. So they just write a regulation. No governmental authority like your state or federal legislatures are passing a law that says we're going to do this. They just write it in and say, here's a new regulation that everybody needs to abide
by. Now, I think the Supreme Court is dealing with that very issue now. I don't think they've resolved it yet, but something could come from them on this matter over the next year or two.
Well, let's hope the Supreme Court says, you know, strikes it down and says you don't have the authority to do this. And that would then begin the process of reining in some of these powers that have been
dismantling and deleting agencies.
And deleting, because our legislators are not doing their job. They create these agencies, and then the agencies are off and running. And guess who's manning the agencies but these ultra-liberal that want to make sure that everybody is woke and that we're following the woke agenda and everything. And so we're going to regulate you. We're not connected to the people at all. That's not how our government
I think
formed.
That the words are detached from reality. They have their own reality, which is ideology, and it doesn't work on the ground. That's we've talked about that many times, and indeed that's a serious issue. Don, again, a member of the board of Creation Moments, we recommend you visit their website, creationmoments.com. Don and we have talked about this many times over the years, the biblical story of creation. That's what they deal with in scientific terms at Creation Moments. You might pay them a visit and they could be delighted. They're in the process now of remodeling the website, and they'll be including a lot of Dr. Don's podcasts on their site as well as ours now. So keep that in mind, but pay them a visit, creationmoments.com. Don, thanks for joining us. We'll look forward to next week, okay? We'll see you then.
Okay, very good. We'll see you next week.